Blog Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? It's that time again on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour. We're live this week. This is the one, the only, the K. Thompson Live Show. And I am the person that is known as the son of the legendary late K. Thompson, my mom. And sitting here continuing our show as we always said we would and we always done. So that's what's happening. This is Wednesday. The 17th of July, and, you know, quite a bit going on in the news today as usual. Every day's a new and exciting day, particularly in the world of politics and government and what's going on in our nation, especially with the one and only, the Donald, Donnie, President Donnie, man. He's the guy that keeps giving. Wow, he's a special guy, taking America all the way back. You know, just when I thought, didn't have nothing to live for anymore. Didn't have no purpose. Here comes Super Donnie and the Republicans back into the picture to save the day and let me know and continue that, yes, America, yes, Virginia, yes, Eric, America is still alive and kicking with its percentage of racists. Still carrying on the fight. God bless them. Good old Donnie. And the Republicans, who you should feel sorry for them, because they, I guess, you know, it's a mutual thing. Let's use each other to get to our goal. And Trump knows that although he is a racist, you know, and I believe that now, because you say so much stuff, whether it's for show or for not, you know, and if it's for show, then that's even worse, right? Because you really don't have that ideology that the racist people have. They have a certain ideology. At least they stick to it. This guy's going to use them as until he gets his goal and it meets his agenda. And everybody else is, you know, they're going to be, like we say in the hood, ass out when it really gets down to it. And one thing I want to talk about, before I'm just going to bring in our brothers here real quick. This guy said one of the most racist statements you can make, then denies it with one of the most racist denials you can make. He's special. He's got a special Jedi power. Let's go first, Brother Byron Saunders. Brother Byron, how are you this evening?
Well, grace and peace, my brother. I'm down here in the swamp where lies are a constitutional amendment. That's a, you know, it's guaranteed to get you at least acknowledged and recognized here in D.C. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Let me just tell you, Eric, the lies we are telling this nation and trying to get away with it under the cover and the guise of white supremacy. You got to call it out now. Now, you know, on the House floor today, it was 187 to 2 something. Well, no, not 187 to 90. Against the impeachment draft by Representative Al Green from Texas. However, wait till next week when Mueller gets on the be able to be on the television, even if he just reads his report, associating the report to him and how it speaks of the 8 to 10 areas in which obstruction of justice and crimes have been committed. See, once we begin that optics, and I grew up in D.C., and I can really remember, it's almost like it was yesterday, Eric, when Nixon came up for the impeachment. Now, make no mistake about it. Yeah, you got a lot of deniers out there right now, and they're denying it because of the propaganda of the GOP. But once you start hearing the truth and the facts from the person who wrote the report, and you know the closed-door hearing is not just with Mueller, it's going to be with his lawyers that put together the report. So you're going to have a lot of fireworks next week, and I'll tell you this: watch what happens once you see Mueller begin to make that testimony, and it hits CNN, MSNBC, and the Fox Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Even Fox is going to have to own up to some facts and truth. And once it starts hitting the American public in the face, and these deniers of people who don't believe that the president is racist, he doesn't have a racist bone in his body. Well, we're going to find out just how much racism is addressing and attacking our constitutional system. I think there's
Absolutely.
Something I want to put this on the floor. I want to put this on the floor before I forget it.
Before we do that, go ahead real quickly.
Yeah.
We could bring Wayne in.
Well, a couple of things. The thing that I want to just say is that perhaps it's time as we engage this, and I like the squad. I like how they addressed the issue of the racism and the tweets and the comments from the Garden that the POTUS made with respect to them. But perhaps it's time that Congress pass a constitutional amendment as federal law for all 50 states on a national, state, and local level, that every politically elected official has to take an oath to rebuke and reject white supremacy, racism, bigotry, and hatred in order to be able to serve.
Good luck with that one, but let's leave that for discussion. Let's bring in the legendary, the one, the only, Mr. Wayne Gilman, longtime colleague of my mom at WLIB. Brother Wayne, what say you?
Well, I have to say good evening to both of you, and again, I'm still taken back by the vacuum that has been left by your mother's departure, but I wish I could be as optimistic about what Byron is saying. I mean, sensible people, sensible Americans, people who decipher the news and read between the lines, understand fully what is going on. But there's something that I feel in my craw. You know, I'm not in the swamp. You know, I don't see what goes on other than what I see coming through the pictures on my TV. But I think there's been enough empirical evidence out there, including testimony from his former longtime attorney, that the man is quote-unquote a racist. So, you know, there's no question about that. And, you know, the whole business of send them back further, you know, exemplifies basically this man's problem. I mean, it's like he has a huge hematoma on his brain. You know, he just doesn't seem to get past, you know, the idea that, you know, we are a land of immigrants. You know, his forefathers, in his own family, came from somewhere else. But he's got a problem with color. There's no question about that. But I think that the amount of nonsense that he's stirring up to build up his base, and I'm certainly extremely concerned that latent, quiet, white support out there that would throw his campaign a couple of dollars to keep this nonsense going for another 4 years. He has to be voted out. Impeachment, Mueller, all that stuff is like pie in the sky at this point. We have to be out in great numbers. We need a Muhammad Ali to knock his ass out, period.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we do need to – it is put up or shut up time now with people that live in this country. It's put up or shut up time whether you're racist or not. It's put up or shut up time whether you want to come out and vote or not. We need the Democrats talking about, you know, one school of thought. We need to expand the party, appeal to moderate Republicans, all this stuff. Everything except let's go after the people who haven't been voting. There's 120 million Americans, people that didn't take part in that election, and they haven't taken part in the last two presidential elections. Hillary got 165 million. He got 65 plus one plus a hacked a computer. So, you know, we need to appeal to that other 120 million Americans, at least to their sense of reason, those that aren't racist, right, those that are reasonable people. But there's no need, like we said, we all said it and everybody hears it, there's no need to assume that this guy is not a racist, certainly would use racist tactics or racist dog whistles to rally up the base. And these people, there's still a large number of individuals in America that are racist and believe in racism, racist friendly, racist okay, racist adjacent. You know, it's varying degrees of racism and prejudice. From the very extreme white supremacist racist who wants to annihilate other races to the next level, the white racist who doesn't want nothing to do with the other races, they're mud people, blah, 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 the next person, and does not even be around them. The next person feels that way but works with a couple, has to deal with some black people in their town, and they work with them. Then the third, the next level is racist who talk to some black people at their job, might be social with them. Then the ones who are semi, you know, but these are all varying degrees of people who have been cool. And if they voted for Republican clearly indicate that they're cool with the way Trump and Republicans are presenting stuff. If you're down with a group of people and you know that group does actions that systematically hurt another group, you can say that you're not anti that other group because you're supporting the actions that systematically hurt that other group. So when the Republicans say they're not racist, but they vote for longer prison sentences, or the crime bill comes along, or there's disparity in sentencing for the uses of the same drug, or now it's a health crisis as opposed to it was a crime problem, then disproportionately your actions affect a group of people. So scientifically, if we're intelligent, that leads us to believe that you must be anti that group of people. There's no two ways that you can couch it, especially when the man says some of the oldest, like I say, this guy used one of the top five most racist statements you could say, then followed it up with one of the top five most racist denials that you can give about being a racist, followed only by maybe some of my best friends are black. So, you know, and the fact that, you know, the fact that they try to stand there in the House of Representatives, it just shows you, and they boo when Nancy Pelosi calls them out, it just shows you that we still have a large percentage of racist white people, varying degrees of racism, but any of that stuff that you that's okay with you is a problem. Because guess what? There are white people that none of that stuff is okay with. There are white people that will check those people themselves and are just as extreme in treating people like individuals and being righteous people as many people of color. Just like you have some of those lost people of color, like I just saw in this rally, that are standing behind Trump cheering him when he was denigrating people who look like them. And also the assumption that these people always have that they need to go back. Like you said, Wayne, you need to go back, Donnie. I could trace my lineage back five generations in America. Now, clearly, you can only trace it back one because your mom is from Scotland. So tell you what, be nice and be a new neighbor when you step in my country. All right?
Thank you.
You're welcome for everything that we built for you to get over here. That's the way it is. You know, when we're little, we were robbed the knowledge of self and the knowledge of education, right, Byron? So when they told us, go back to your country where you came from, I don't know about you guys, but I was not aware of that knowledge yet. And it's something that a child shouldn't have to be confronted with. And when they made you feel that, oh, your people and the educational system, I know when I was still in grade school, was just about the only thing that black people did back in that day would be slaves and was bumbling. Didn't learn about Frederick Douglass when I was in grade school. Didn't learn about all these great black heroes and what black people were really doing in this country, building it for free. So when you realize and become woke about that knowledge, you realize they've made up their whole world. They've made the Matrix, where they are the top dogs.
The sad part,
you know,
where they are the heroes.
Go ahead.
No, Eric, the only thing I wanted to say to that is that, you know, we're not a monolith, and we're from all sorts of different stripes. And I'm certain if you dig, you know, far enough back in your lineage, you'll find where your ancestors, and I'm not just talking about Africa. I think, you know, we've all been part of the miscegenation process. But, you know,
okay,
I came from one of the asshole countries.
Let me just stop right here. When you say we're not a monolith, who are you talking about? The we is that you're referring to when you say we're not a monolith?
I'm talking about our community, that we have different points of view. My point is that I grew up in a predominantly, when Bedford-Stuyvesant was predominantly black, you know, we call that BG, before gentrification. And I used to hear criticism from people who looked like me, you know, because my parents spoke with an accent or they looked a little different, you know, than the average person that was in the area who were African Americans. And I mean, this is the divisiveness that some of us have bought into. And as I said, I confirm the fact that we're not a monolith is that we have people of color that stand up there and support this man at his rally.
But in large part,
whether they're paid people or, you know, I'm sorry, what'd you say?
We can talk about that. But in large part, it is the white supremacy. Those individuals that look like us are a symptom of what's been going on since slavery times, right? The house Negro,
exactly.
The house person mentality. So in large part, yes, we have that. But those are symptoms that you caught hell from your black brothers and sisters because you're a black person who spoke with an accent, which should have been something that encouraged them to learn about you and encouraged them to reach out and say, what is the common ground that we have from our brothers and sisters across the waters. So that's a symptom of what we've this diabolical plan that was forced upon us in this country. But the very notion of democracy is that people could live free, right? That's why when Kellyanne asked the Jewish gentleman the other day, the other reporter, what's your ethnicity? See, that's why Europeans kind of came to America. They heard of democracy. So when they went to different tribal areas, they didn't have to worry about having to fight or worry about, you know, if I was down with this part of Italy and Mussolini and I'm from another part of Italy, do I have to worry? Or I was from France. So when they get to a country where basically they all look similar and they can all blend in, it's harder to hate on each other. And that's what the promise of democracy does. But so then that becomes, well, who's the obvious one that's the other? Black and brown people. But the very essence of democracy depends on them recognizing the freedom that it affords people, the freedom that many of them came over here for us. The hypocrisy is that they're not willing to extend it to people that don't have the same skin color that they have. What do you think, Byron?
Well,
I'm sorry, Wayne, were you?
Here's what I think is something that we need to say so public understands and recognizes why that comment, go back to where you came from, is offensive. Do you know that comment is considered a federal offense? EEOC guidelines.
The actual words, right. The actual words are put in.
That's right. It's a violation.
There's no more textbook example that you can get to.
That's it. So at the point at which, is he racist? It's beyond that question. Did he break a federal law? Yes, he did. When he said, go back to where you came from, is a violation of the EEOC guidelines that have been a federal law for quite some time now. So it's not just my say, hearsay, your say, or Wayne's say. It's a federal offense, and we continue to not adjudicate the crimes that he has broken, federal offenses, okay? That's why I'm saying at the point at which, right now the optics of the propaganda that's GOP and Fox-led makes it look like that he is the saint and the second coming. But in truth, the matter is that once these laws that have been broken become a constant reminder of an individual who continues to break every law, not just the moral laws of the Ten Commandments, but federal laws. He broke a federal law by demeaning those four women who came in who are Americans, and you can't do that. And so we have to start throwing the book at him. You know, if we're going to win the case, you can't just go on conjecture and hear saying he said, she said. You're going to have to start throwing the book at him. That's why today's impeachment vote was very important. Yes, it did not get the full Democratic House to support the initiative, but never forget this. The House impeaches. The Senate holds the trial. So no matter what the Senate says, if it goes on the public record that the House of Congress impeaches him, it is recorded as such. So if it goes to trial in the Senate, that's another whole story. But you see, you got to start first by giving the records, putting it on the record. That's what has to start first. So it's a whole procedure, guys. And before we jump off the ship saying it ain't going to ever happen, be very conscious of the fact that if the process starts with putting it into the public record, which then becomes part of the history of the United States Congress. Remember now, Andrew Johnson was impeached. He failed in the Senate by one vote. Bill Clinton was impeached. That's right. Bill Clinton was impeached. It failed in the Senate. So the notion of can impeachment work, it has to be a procedural process. To deny Congress that procedural process is to deny their power as constitutionally written.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead, Wayne.
No, I was just going to say I'm in agreement with everything that Byron and everything that you said. My only problem is that it seems like he is so arrogant and flies in defiance in the face of any law that has been set up. It's like he wants to guide us towards a dictatorship. He is talking against the free press. You know, the deal is if he's given another term, God only knows what more damage he would do. Look at this Eric Garner case that happened at the hands of William Barr. You know, there's got to be some – we are a system of check and balances, and I agree. And some of the stuff that was written by our forefathers, you know, is somewhat archaic. I mean, this business if the president says something racist, you know, a member of Congress cannot repeat it on the floor that he said something racist, like it's some – unethical measure. You know, it is what it is. You know, I mean, the deal is that we have to make this system work for what it is, because he is hell-bent at all those, and I think he would throw the Republican Party, you know, kick them to the curb, you know, and that's why I think that they're so damn spineless, because they figured that they have a champion with him, but it's all about him. That's the thing. It's all about him. So for only four Republicans to come forward and support this Democratic agenda to show where he's, you know, blatantly a racist, I just think that's very telling about what the party is. And I've seen the arguments as you have on TV, where they come back and say, oh, he's not a racist, and maybe he went too far saying this and went too far saying that. But it is what it is, you know?
It's also the person. That's right, and it's also the person saying he's not a racist. See, when you have someone, when you say we're all going to abide by the laws and rules of the society, that makes the assumption, that goes on the assumption that everybody is going to abide by the laws of the society, right?
Exactly.
We have these rules, and everybody commits to following the rules. This guy and his party, right? They've condoned him not following the rules. They don't care whether he breaks the rules, like Byron was talking about, these subpoenas that went out to Barr today they withheld evidence for the Mueller trial. There was evidence that they withheld. These guys don't care about breaking the law, A, but then on the flip side, what they'll do is they've used the process to trip people up. Like the whole thing with Nancy Pelosi, them trying to attack her words, it was a procedural element, you know? That's what they get caught up in, the minutiae of the rules. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's how they get over it, because there's always some minutiae in the rules where they can – where's their loophole to kill the whole thing. And then they're able to kill the process, right? So, Byron, when you're talking about the strategy, it's always been the strategy that we've had to adopt. Make them live up to their very words, right? So make them live up to the letter of the law, because you guys are the ones that established this law. So we're going to challenge your integrity, challenge your honor, that you live up to the very thing that you said. And that's the only way, Byron, quite intelligently or that you put it, is that that's been the strategy. That's what a lot of the people like a Thurgood Marshall, like Frederick Douglass back in the day said, we have to make them live up to their very word, right? And Dr.
Absolutely.
King says a promissory note, talk about the promissory note being returned uncashed, right? Because
they're
causing them to live up to their very words that they claim to be.
And we have to be very realistic about it, because as what really came out the other day and as must be linked to all that we're saying, remember in Los Angeles 3 days ago, they found one person with a cache of over 1,000 weapons. 1,000 weapons!
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
and a very wealthy person, not a poor person, a wealthy
mm-hmm.
person. So when you talk about what ammunition do we have in our bop gun that will
right.
allow us to keep moving forward, and why we have won every time we've gone to the court since its inception of at least hearing the inequities and recognizing that when the courts ruled to equal the playing field, and this is what's really important. I went to a backyard movie the other day that showed a very dear friend of ours here in Washington, D.C., where in an affluent community where they were showing the Wilmington 1898 massacre, a documentary. Now, that documentary in 1898, you may not or may know about Wilmington, North Carolina, where
we don't. So tell us about it.
The town, just like Tulsa, Oklahoma, was destroyed, and whites went on a rampage, and they did things as a result of states' rights. And once the federal government took its troops out of the South during Reconstruction, white people began to re-Southernize their Confederacy. So that every time a law was passed where blacks were then given equal footing on the playing field, we showed that we could take what was given us and then bring it about so that our communities will sustain and survive well beyond anyone's expectations.
Okay.
Just like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, doctors, lawyers, pharmacies,
mm-hmm.
hospitals, I mean affluency in the black community 30 years after the Civil War in Wilmington, North Carolina, was booming.
Mm.
Booming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and because of the fact that white people refused to accept our engagement to establish wealth and ownership, this is what this is all about. And so
mm-hmm.
the Republican Party right now has looked at the demographics of 2025 and 2030 that says they will not be a majority in this country. And they're fighting tooth and nail to hold on to that make America white again concept.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do it.
Sure.
Now, link this to those 1,000 weapons discovered in Los Angeles 3 days ago, by a wealthy white man. Why would
mm-hmm.
he need 1,000 weapons? And who is he pointing those weapons at?
Unless he want to give to somebody.
That's right. He ain't making gifts of those things. Okay.
Unless he wants
and the notion
to,
is
unless they
in
have,
a country that's right now in a country that's over 350 million people. 300
mm-hmm.
there are over 300 million guns in America.
One for every man, woman and child in America.
And the fifth over 50% of those 300 million weapons are owned by 3% of the population.
That's right.
Now, that should tell
you
something.
Right.
We cannot win the war with weapons. So we have to be very diligent in making sure the vote works and making sure the rule of law works. And we have shown through trial, through error, through blood, sweat, and tears over the last 400 years, when we do that, we win. That's
well,
the other
also
side
too,
of the coin.
Well, and also, too, even after Reconstruction, around that era, in history,
yeah.
when there were more people of color in the United States, there were more slaves here than slave owners, and they started thinning it out,
yeah.
if you remember. The slaves
yeah.
were unaware of that fact. That was the only,
yes.
probably the only time in American history when the tables could have been turned had these slaves been aware and revolted and used their overwhelming numbers to take this country over. And that
yeah.
probably would have been neutralized even in that day, because everybody who had the weapons were the slave owners and the white people.
Right.
Now, fast forward
right.
all these years when, A, not only do you have that gun issue and that statistic, but you also have black people not being the majority population, very small population. I don't think it's as small as they claim, because I know they don't count us all, but I do know that we have not been in the majority. And when you think about things like probably Malcolm X, Dr. King, and they look at the actual numbers, you know, in a confrontation, we're not going to win. But what happens in 2020, the approaching time of 2020 with not just us but people of color in general, I think that many of them perhaps might be looking at it like a South Africa situation where the minority rules a great majority and probably are studying how they can avoid that happening where the majority began to come up into overthrow the government and be recognized as equal, somewhat equal members or working towards equal members of the society. The other thing that you talked about in terms of the thought has just left of my mind. You mentioned something else that I wanted to address along those lines. It was along the lines of strategy and things like that. But that's kind of the point that I think a lot of people also, too, about those old communities, right? What happened many oftentimes, Roswell and all these communities, right, were self-containing, meaning that these black communities that were slaves were set free, they flourished and they kept within themselves. They didn't go outside their community. And so the larger community looks at this and probably is, on top of just being supremacist and hateful of other people, jealous of the – look at these slaves now. They're thriving. Yeah. They built a community. They built a community. I think even probably the thought was we are free now, right? So the former slaves that were now running successful communities probably worked even harder to have a just society. You know what I mean? They probably didn't screw each other out of businesses. They probably didn't try to cheat each other. They probably just worked really hard so that everybody could enjoy freedom to its fullest. And if we all work together, we can have this utopian community. But what happened was in the white community, they have already experienced all those years of being in charge, and B, the flaws of humanity, where they probably did business with each other, and you had someone who screwed somebody else out of their business, and somebody who ripped somebody else off and did that. So all of those ills of a society in general, inflicted their society because they were an old society. They were used to their freedom. They took it for granted. But here comes these new people that are new to freedom, that can work hard and stand on their own land and their own work, that they can benefit from their own work. They probably worked even more harder. Say, listen, y'all, we can all come up together. Let's treat each other with respect in our community. Let's address each other. Let's support each other. Let's do business with each other. And so that mentality, which when I think about it, was similar to the 60s, when you just look at how black people were dressed back in the day and how we presented ourselves, right, that we are a worthwhile people. I think that was missing in the white community then. And they got jealous when they saw newly freed people.
That's right, because when you go back to the 60s and the Afrocentric period, there was this moment of pride. We participated in the process. We were establishing middle-class values, middle-class wealth. And once that started to happen and take hold, the GOP in particular, and some Democrats who didn't want to see it happen, began to attack the union and decimate the middle class black America. That part of it. Remember this, the freeze on federal jobs, okay? The attack on the unions, because in places like Michigan and the car industry and the industry in which the middle class, black middle class was flourishing. And when that was destroyed, Detroit went down.
Yep.
Think about it, because the destruction of the black middle class was an intentional weapon to defuse the balance of power, because wealth was only being attained prior to that, and right now, mostly by athletes and musicians, the hip-hop
and entertainers, sure.
Entertainers.
Sure, and that's right.
So where are our unions? Where are the people who came through the union system, even though we weren't the top line hires and we went through the apprenticeship programs, and you know what that was all about. That was all, there was so much nepotism in the unions that we, you know, you the white guys brought their brothers, sisters, cousins.
That's
we
right.
got in the front door and they made sure we didn't bring our family with us, but we
that's
stood
right.
in
but there
the
was,
line.
they had to follow that because it was a federal law that they could not discriminate against black people anymore. So to a certain degree, they had to follow at least a bare minimum of these people, which, like you're right, Byron, it afforded the black people, a black middle class, to flourish and to come up a little bit. And once they started having attacking the unions and these right-to-work states, which ironically were normally in middle America or in the South, when the corporations were big, you know, it's like in West Virginia, the coal miners don't have a union, but they get abused, and they get abused as their workers' rights are abused on a daily basis down there. And still, they buy into the racist rhetoric of following these very individuals who let them die on the job with no concern at all. You know, what
That's
do you
right.
think, Wayne? What's your you're a little quiet
no,
there?
No, I happen
Mr.
to
Gilman,
agree. I
your...
mean, the thing is, as a former union rep and all that, I mean, I've
mm-hmm.
seen the process
and I'm in a union
where it's
too.
Worked, you know, both ways. And the deal is, you know, I would say to this day, having worked the majority of my time for a black corporation, that thank God there was a union, because I just think it's just the nature of business, you know, where people...
Right.
So it
was a black corporation. I know you pointed out for a black corporation, the nature of business, not that
yeah,
it was a black corporation
a,
that started happening. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the deal is, and it saddens me that we don't have more of them still around, because I think
right.
this exactly what you cited, what you and Byron cited, led to our downfall in that... unfortunately, you know, there should be a course on businesses that are privately held. I've always said that. But I also
mm-hmm.
think it's important to see the sacrifices that many of us have made to have the kind of freedoms that we're enjoying today, that millennials enjoying, but they don't realize what struggles it has taken to get there. You know, black people are we define culture in this United States. There is
right.
nothing that we haven't done
Absolutely.
That basically does not set the tone. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with this, and somebody I have a relative who's married to someone in the Asian community, and I just found out about this little rapper Awkwafina the other night. Are you familiar
yeah.
with her?
Byron?
I don't know. She's Chinese, does not speak a lick of Chinese at all. I think she's part Chinese and part South Korean. But the deal
right.
is that she grew up in an urban environment in Queens. She went to school with the young lady from Trinidad. I can't think of her name. I'm sort of embarrassed by her anyway. But the deal is that, you know, the thing is that it being around people like us, And the influences that we've had on art and in education and everything, business, everything, you know, basically has inspired other immigrants who've come to the shore and wanting to do the same thing in their own way. And I'm fascinated, you know, she was an actress in a recent Asian film last year that was
Crazy
so popular. Can come again?
Yeah, Crazy Rich Asians. Crazy
yeah, yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. She was in that.
Oh,
and,
I know. I know exactly which one you're talking about because
okay,
I see
yeah,
the
very
one that was acting
rap.
Black.
I
yeah.
mean, yeah, and, right. and the thing is, it's just that you know, I'm impressed with what influences we've had, but I'm even more impressed about the advances that we've made, even within the ranks of media and journalism. But I still maintain that the ones that are controlling the show are the fat cats that basically have owned these properties for generations, you know?
Absolutely.
And until
and
we
that's,
can break
that's a power
that,
structure.
Yeah,
power
and,
structure.
And change it, you know, we're going to have more challenges like this. And, you know, I mean, it saddens me that you know, to find out that a place that your mother and I worked for you know, for the better part of our productive years, you know, is now in the hands of a completely different ethnic community than what it was lost to in the first place. I mean, and with the intellectual property to boot. And I'm not saying that that you know, the Asian company that bought these stations should be faulted for what they're doing, but why didn't we, who were so,
that's the age-old problem, is it not? I mean, there's several elements to that predicament. It's the nature of business, it's the nature of black people doing business in the white supremacist business world, because there's a certain amount of that racism that probably held the owners of the station back from making bigger moves, right? Just like Bill Cosby, you know, even with all of his flaws and criminal activity, when he tried to buy NBC, there was the issue. So
he was denied.
That white supremacist power structure that has been prevalent in this country for since its founding is still prevalent and has been. And not only, like we said, there's various elements to that, business being what it is, cutthroat big business being what it is, where they're going to try to annihilate everybody that even tries to give them competition, and then there's a racist element. So, I mean, there's so many hurdles if you happen to be black, and obviously back in the day, if you happen to be black and a woman, right? There's so all of these hurdles, and ironically, it's not lost upon us that the women that Trump, Donnie, has chosen to attack are women of color, right? Because those are the women that are the strongest voting demographic now. So, of course,
and I think we're going to be successful with the squad, not to cut you off, Eric. I really have, you know, every generation there's a group, you know. And the deal is we went through that whole civil rights period, and we had our heroes and sheroes then. And I think these four that they've singled out are definitely getting the message across, whether all Democrats are not in lockstep. I think Nancy Pelosi understands it, you know, to be her being a descendant of immigrants and stuff like that. But the fact of the matter is that I just think that the message has to be drilled home come 2020, that we cannot afford to have a risk of another 4 years of this guy, because he's still changing things. And there's that silent majority out there that still wishes to see a status quo, and they're not ready for the tidal wave of this country going from completely white to brown in under 50 years from now.
One thing that was significant about this documentary that I saw the other day about the Wilmington Massacre of 1898, the same methods used then in perpetuating propaganda is the same method that's being used right now. This is not new, what the GOP is doing. That's why I'm trying to tell you about history and how it's repeating itself, because what they did was to spread the same kind of misinformation, disinformation. And remember, back then, they had telegraphs. They didn't have telephones. They didn't have Fox TV. So their methodology was to spread rumors and use propaganda to convince the other ignorant white people of what was going on. Because remember, North Carolina at the time of post Reconstruction had more African freed slaves as congresspersons and in magistrates' positions than white people. Think about that. So ultimately, how did they destroy what was becoming a model of how a community would work? Understand it even more, because Wilmington is a port city. It was booming, y'all. I'm telling you, it was booming. And once they destroyed the black community and the black businesses and ran them out of town, you know what was their biggest demise? White folks never recovered.
Wow,
because
that's right.
Blacks and white, blacks and whites were living together in a harmony based on equality. Now, yes, we understand there was some inequality going on because we're still talking about 25 years after the Civil War at the best. But mostly, the black community was sustaining itself.
Mm-hmm. That's what
Wilmington
I'm saying. And they benefited
Wilmington
from doing business.
Yeah.
And all, this is what I'm saying. They would rather cut off their own nose than to share it. This is why I've said to people, friends have heard me say that the white man and I understand that it's racist for me to make a blanket statement like that. The white man would rather blow the world up than share it
with the other
people of this world. There are those people who would rather destroy it, would rather starve than be able to nourish themselves by sitting down with a person of color. They would rather starve. That was the one thing that they could all get over back in the day, back in those very times. The people who weren't slave owners, who were just as poor as some of the slaves, the one thing that they were told by the slave owners and the propagandist people, well, you're still a white man in America. That's the one thing you can count on. Didn't have a pot to piss in. We're starving. Kids were poor, running around, but there were still white people in America. White people need to ask themselves, what does that really mean? All of you people that are racist, what does that mean for you that you can still say that if the people that are supposed to be of your very group are still willing to sell you down the road when the times get tough or to sell you down the road to the highest bidder? What does that mean? This guy could come out and say that they don't love America and stand up there with a straight face, and all of these idiots, they're going to stand in there and listen to him and act like he didn't just say a year and a half ago and stand up there with one of our biggest enemies in the world and deny his own intelligence people and said, I believe this Russian man right here, and believe that that was more American than these women who are speaking up. And they're
going
to stand there with straight faces and listen to this lunatic and act as if they didn't see him on the news. Sell out the very America that we've all, anybody my age and younger, a little bit older, remembers that Russia was always our mortal enemy. That's what we came up believing. And we so much so, you remember, we were working to come together to find common ground to be friendly with Russia. I'm a Kennedy baby, man. We know what went down with Jack Kennedy and Khrushchev. We know what.
Right.
I'm a Reagan college time kid. We know what happened with Reagan and Gorbachev. They've always been portrayed as our enemy, and it was the people that were trying to come together and was being promoted. Let's find common ground. Let's bring Russia. Now we've gone so far to the extreme that this guy is in cahoots with our mortal enemy, and he's spun it so much, and their racism is so deep that they're cool with that. They don't even want to hear nothing else. They don't even want to. They wouldn't take a rope from Umar if they were drowning to save herself.
Scary.
Talk about send her back. They sound stupid. That's really it. And it's a shame that these are people that are so unintelligent that they would rather starve than really see what this clown is doing. Don the con. He's nothing but a con. And these people stand up there cheering for it. It's unbelievable, but it shows you how deep their racism and their hatred is.
The problem
Well, I'm going to tell you how you change it in a second, but here's what's even worse. The playbook that the Russians used to disrupt our 2016 election process, the GOP are using the same tactics. That's what's going on. And we have to make sure we post that notice because they're like propaganda, you know, to compromise the truth. And the way you're going to debunk it, the way you have to debunk it is that there's one is you have to keep putting in front of people optics to change what their visual self is acknowledging, because see, at the point in which you got to use history, you got to use facts, but you can't wait to debunk it 2 days later. That's right. You jump back in their face, you know, and like tonight. Now he's in North Carolina tonight, right? he's revving up his base. Well, you know what? We got 20 candidates. What the hell are they doing hiding in the places where they are? They need to be right outside that arena. right now.
That's right.
Exactly.
All 20
That's
of those
right.
candidates should be there right now to confront the lies and instantaneously.
We're holding another rally down the road from
them, right.
like Beto did against Ted
yeah.
Cruz.
Exactly. You want to put the fire out, you better bring the fire department with you. Because if you
That's
don't,
right.
you're gonna get burned.
Let me just say, too, about, you know, the squad, this group of ladies called the squad. You know, I haven't been the most impressed with them. I thought I haven't been impressed, but once they got there, I've seen it time and time again, both from the entertainment industry and politics, how people get a little carried away. They start believing the hype, you know, and that's what the rap song, don't believe the hype. And I felt some of them were really feeling themselves a little bit too much in terms of some of the members that people that have been there already. And they started attacking and challenging some of the people. Like, you know, I know that AOC was supporting people that were running against members of the Black Congressional Caucus. People have been
right.
there for a long time, fighting the fight for African Americans. So when you jump out there and you say Nancy Pelosi said some racist stuff, you're kind of giving people a little bit of fodder right now. You know what I'm saying? You're giving them a little bit of fodder.
Yeah.
A, there's Black African Americans that know, I know for a fact that she's not racist. I know that for a fact that someone who has family in and works with her and been around know that that's not who the lady is. So find another way to say it. Don't let that come out your mouth because you're trying to make points because you think that your perspective is the – just because you just came around to some thinking that you done discovered something that people ain't thought of before and worked it out in their mind and said, we're going to try it this way because we've come to this conclusion because we've tried all that other stuff that you new people are just realizing. We understand that you
well, let me tell you, let me tell you,
all
right.
That's like health care. When Trump comes out and says, who knew health care was so hard? It's like, are you stupid or what? Why do you think they've been going for the last 50 years trying to get it? And people stand up and let this guy make this statement like, yes, he's so brilliant. Who knew? That's what they're saying in the last election. I mean, we're dealing with half the population is people who are barely got out of high school. Oh, that's right. Now I remember. They're not educated. So what happens when you get some jackass coming and tell you anything and tell you that it's raining and he's really peeing on your head, you're going to believe it because you don't know no better.
Well, two things I heard this week. That one, where the fur is going to fly in the district where AOC is the representative. The Republicans have found a Black Jamaican woman to run against her. Now, think about that. A Black Jamaican Republican, female, to run against AOC in her district in the Bronx.
And
you can always find one of us
that's
the human nature element.
Second thing I heard that was I thought brilliant, and he's probably going to step out of the ring after this next debate. De Blasio said, with respect to the North American Free Trade Agreement between Mexico and Canada, he said the one thing that's missing at the table are the unions. Think about this: the only people who are sitting at the tables are the Fortune 500 companies. And the reason why the trade agreement is so screwed up, I was almost used the F word, is so screwed up is because the Fortune 500 companies are making a hand over fist profit by employing cheap labor outside of the union forces. Now, De Blasio says, you really want to make this fair? Bring the unions to the table and then negotiate the trade agreement.
He sure did.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Byron, because not to cut you off, Eric, the thing that really that bothers me is you hear this guy time and again talk about how he is now ending outsourcing with all the economic initiatives that he's imposed. That all of a sudden, all these American companies that are making money hand over fist, he doesn't get it that, you know, he may have a tariff in China, and then all of a sudden the people who are doing doing work from this government or businesses in this country will go to another port of call where they can find labor even cheaper because of what Donald is doing in one space. He doesn't get it that the world is global now, and he thinks that this protectionist aspect of business is going to be something that will come back because he's talking all this smack and has nothing to account for it for. Nothing. The evidence is clear, you know. And yes, it's difficult to get these people to come back. You can impose all sorts of fines and things like that, like and taxes, like what Obama tried to impose. But the bottom line is that they're out to pursue cheap labor. And they're going to – I just think that we have to figure out a better way to get around this problem so that the farmers could eat and that whatever companies that we have here that are in need of change, that it's done comfortably, particularly with the coal miners in places like West Virginia and other spots of the country where that is still in the fore, you know – We're the precipice of solar energy now. You know, we don't we see the effects. I'm in the middle of a gigantuan rainstorm as we speak, and all of this is attributable, in my opinion, to global warming. So
Hello?
You know, going back to what we used to do ain't doing it for us.
That's
sure,
right.
But you get people who benefit from by keeping people ignorant to that effect. You'll get people talking. I mean, that's why I put one of their in the Republican Party's talking points as it relates to coal, the coal industry, is to make up the phrase clean coal. It burns clean. Okay, that
right.
might have been cool when we didn't have other energy sources. Yes, you're right. But now we do. So now you just sound stupid
right.
when you keep saying that. Or worse off, and what really is going to tick me off is you think I'm stupid because you keep saying it to me. You know, and that's the thing. They don't. These people don't even. The people that follow the Republican Party support them. They don't even realize that they're being insulted.
Yes, I know.
That's how blind their hatred is. That they don't realize they're focused on one thing so much. You don't even realize that you're being taken advantage of. That's how blind you are. And what you? I want to go back to what you said about the GOP finding a black Jamaican woman Republican to run against AOC. You can always find, that's human nature, you can always find one of us that's still everybody else
exactly.
out. To me, there should be no black people, no people of color that want to be in that party. The one thing I will say about the squad, what I like about them is that they make a noise. That's what we need.
Yes.
We need Democrats to make noise. Now, don't want
Absolutely.
To make the noise where it becomes a circular firing squad, but also make the noise. So now would be a perfect time is for them to stand up there with Nancy Pelosi and all of them have a press conference and say the bridge is over, we're reuniting, here it is. Either you're racist in the country, you want to keep it in this place, or you want to move forward. And this is what Democrats are going to do. And the Democrats have always had problems with their messaging. And if these ladies can help us get a larger platform, a larger megaphone, then I say all for them. But they need to, you know, certain things need to be worked out. They need to not attack certain individuals. What I don't like is that, you know, a lot of stuff was gotten off the backs of black people in this country. And a lot of we pushed broke down the door for rights for a lot of people. And a lot of people coming behind us, sometimes they want to act like you forget who was the ones who these doors got broken, who got the broken nose from being the first one to go through this door. You know, so don't act like that. Because the bottom line, when it's about survival and some angry mob of one type of group or another is coming after and they trying to get the main other is us with the darker skin. The bottom line.
So
all them other people
that
could possibly blend in for survival purposes, that's fine, but I got to worry about me because I can't do no blending in. So I got to walk right and exact and demand freedom. We got about a minute and 30 left. If you guys want to give some final remarks, I got to say that I know my mom will be commenting on Wimbledon because Serena was defeated, but that girl played her behind off in beating her. So
yes,
you got to take your hats off to that young lady.
Yes, she did. She was in the zone, Eric. And when as an athlete, and you know this, when you're in the zone, it's kind of hard to beat anybody. Okay. And
that's
it's
right.
at that point,
that's right.
they play great tennis. I mean, look at Federer and Djokovic. Great
Djokovic.
Tennis.
Yeah.
5 hours. My God. And they either one of them could have won, but at the point at which it's a will of force. And when you have that with you, that's it.
There it is.
Anyway,
We got to follow a lot of tennis, but I have to say, I know Serena is going to bounce back one day. She's going to get that.
Well, the U.S. Open is coming up next, so I'm going to try to be there to watch that. Because she got something to prove, considering what down last year. I want to say thanks to everybody that listened to the Kay Thompson Live Show. I want to say, Brother Byron, give the people your send-off, brother, from down there in the swamp reporting to us.
Peace and love always, y'all. Come on now.
All right. Brother Byron Saunders, we'll talk to you again next week. Take care.
All right.
Brother Wayne Gilman.
Yes, sir.
All right.
I'm with Reverend Jackson tonight. Yeah, let's keep hope alive, man. That's all I could say.
All right. I want to thank you, Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm the person that's known as the son, honoring my mom, Kay Thompson. We're going to keep the show going like we always said we would. I'm just trying to get the music up for you. Listen again next week. This will be the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can hear us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. We're also archived, so you can listen to us anytime you want. Take care. Love you, Ma. See you next week.